He taught me, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
To infinity and beyond!
No crying? There's no crying in baseball!
This is Sparta!
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah!
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Welcome to Know Your Cinema.
All right, we are back with another exciting episode of Know Your Cinema. This is our 15th episode. And if you enjoy this episode, you can check out all of our other episodes. We've got 14 episodes covering over 30 different movies available to listen to on the very device you're listening to us now.
30 movies.
It's over 30 movies.
Really?
Mm-hmm. We're at, like, I think this is 34 or 35.
Man, we've been cranking them out.
We have. It's been a long road to get us here. Another part of, our presence, if you will, is our social media. You can follow us on Instagram at KYC Podcast, on Twitter at KYC Podcast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/KYC Podcast. You can find links to all of that stuff, plus all of the places that you can listen to the podcast at anchor.fm/KYC. Anchor.fm/KYC. So please check out all of those wonderful things. This week we have a movie that Vivian has never seen. It is a Kevin Smith movie starring Seth Rogen called Zach and Miri Make a Porno. Vivian?
Hi.
Do you want to give your thoughts on said movie? Or actually, matter of fact, not only is it me and Vivian here, there's also Devlin, the other guy.
Hello.
Just forgetting some key players, eh?
Yeah, the other I forgot the other fat guy of the podcast.
Oof. Okay. Yeah. First, you don't introduce him, and then you call him names. What is happening in episode 15?
I'm allowed to call him fat.
Why is that?
He's fat.
I'm fat too.
Fat too.
The hell?
Yeah.
You didn't know that?
Yeah.
Okay.
What are the rules? We're the only club you can join.
That's a fact. That's a fact. That's a fact.
Okay.
And you can.
I'm just saying, anybody can get fat. I mean,
it's all inclusive.
How it is?
Literally.
Yeah, you can be a fat boy too.
You can do this too. You can be one of us.
You can be a thick boy too. Shout out to all the other thick boys out there listening to this podcast.
Holding down the buffet line. Yeah.
I think I can go more rounds on a buffet than you guys. Absolutely.
We're gonna have to put that to a challenge.
Yeah, we might actually have to do that. I just have this feeling that I can go more rounds than you guys for sure.
I think what we'd have to do is first off, that would have to be public knowledge for the podcast. So if we end up doing this, if you want us to do this, please let us know. Shout us out.
The first annual KYC buffet eating contest.
If you want that to happen, you know, shout us out on our social media. Send us messages or comments or whatever, letting us know that you do want to see a buffet eating contest. We can somewhat film it. But the thing is, what we'd have to do is weigh the plates when they got to the table and then weigh them when you were done with them to see the amount of food that you ate off of each plate to get a total weight count.
Oh, okay. This is like super legit.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, you could just load up on salad at the time. I mean,
like, you don't want to eat something shitty. You want to eat, like, But then again, like, that also means, like, if you eat, like, shit. Because, like, if I go to a buffet, I'm not eating – I'm eating meat. Like, that's what the – that's where the money's at.
Yep, that's the protocol, of course. I mean, you paid the money. You're going to eat the food that cost the most.
Right. I'm not going to eat the fucking – if I touch a roll, yeah, I'm not eating lettuce or a roll. That's not going down. Unless Texas Roadhouse opens up a buffet, in which case – I will go for the rolls.
Okay, I didn't know their rolls were that impressive.
No, you know your roll. Know your roll and shut your mouth.
I know my Hawaiian rolls.
You should know your roll. Shut your mouth.
I know my Hawaiian rolls.
All right.
A little sidebar.
Let's get back to the important stuff. Let's talk.
Let's get back to Zach and Mary making a porno.
Let's not let Vivian go first. Since he might just shit. All right, all
Dev,
over this
you
movie.
Go then.
Okay. So, this movie, as I mentioned at the end of last week's podcast, a movie that I watch every Thanksgiving or around that time, just because the setting is in Thanksgiving and kind of rolls over into Christmas. I love Kevin Smith. Ever since I watched Clerks for the first time back in the day, fell in love with his work, followed his career. Me and Jason went to see Jay and Silent Bob, the reboot. So I love almost everything he puts to film, minus like Jersey Girl.
I even like Jersey Girl.
I know you do. You love sappy stories like that.
I'm his one pure fan.
This movie speaks to a lot of different things that, you know, have happened in people's lives, you know, where they're either poor and they're desperate for money and, you know, they do odd jobs or whatever, but, you know, they take it to a whole other level of extreme here where, you know, they decide that they're just going to get people together to make a porno with various people that they've hired. It has a great cast. Craig Robinson, one of my favorite comedians. Jason Mewes, of course, he's almost in every Kevin Smith movie. I can't say enough about this movie, how much I really enjoy it. It's not, you know, it's not on the scales of like, you know, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back or anything like that, but I really do enjoy this movie. Jason?
I also have always been a big Kevin Smith fan, and I've seen this movie probably 3 or 4 times. It is not one I watch every single year, but one that I always enjoy watching. I feel like it's entertaining every time. This time I found it particularly hilarious. I was damn near in tears laughing at some of the jokes. And there's shit that I already knew was coming, but they hit me pretty hard this week. I think it's probably because I've been having like a tough week. So I think like the comedy really hit really hard when I watched it, just like a nice relief. But I thoroughly enjoyed the movie this week. I think Seth Rogen's hilarious in it. I think the dialogue is spot on and funny as hell. And I think it's also the most realistic depiction of winter ever.
Well, it's filmed in Pittsburgh, you know, outside of Pittsburgh, so. If you've ever been to Pittsburgh or Pennsylvania in the wintertime, it gets pretty cold down there.
It is like Midwest winter to a T. So I thought that was kind of spot on. Like they, I mean, obviously part of it is just, you know, he kind of got lucky on having authentic winter, but damn, nailed the winter. Diff, your thoughts?
You would be right about the winter. They did nail that part. No, but seriously, that was one of the first things I noticed was the, I guess you can call that the production design of the movie. It might have been just luck, but it was perfect for visually kind of describing the precarious situation financially the main characters are in, so that just added to the tone and the setting of where they were at. I think the only other there was a show that I was watching recently called Trapped. It's an Icelandic show, and that's probably the only other show where you really just feel the cold just coming out of the screen. But yeah, I was just thinking on that. I was like, oh, that's really cool. They either got lucky or they were really paying attention as far as making sure that the setting was fitting with what the where the characters were. Good job on that. As far as Kevin Smith, I probably should do a little bit of preamble on that before actually talking about the movie. Obviously, my knowledge and experience with Kevin Smith stuff is not going to be anywhere close to what you guys, as far as your love for him and just your knowledge base of his movies and the other stuff that he's done. I watched a bunch of his evenings with Kevin Smith back in the day. Those I enjoyed. I love when he talks. So he's got these just huge, long, rambling stories. Those are really fun to listen to. The two movies that I have watched of his is the original Clerks and Dogma. Both of those that I like. I watched Jersey Girl, and I don't remember after, you know, the end credits rolled. It was just a forgettable movie. But when it comes to Zach and Mary, it's good, but I don't think it's a movie that I would have went and picked out to watch myself. It's just because it was recommended, I watched it. And still, it's not like a movie that I would go out of my way to watch. It was, I feel like Kevin Smith has written better stuff than this. There was definitely some really funny moments, one that I was busted out laughing. But overall, it, I feel like Seth Rogen has done much better movies than this. And it also reminded me of a bunch of the movies that came out around the mid-2000s that were mainly like Judd Apatow movies, like Knocked Up or 40-Year-Old Virgin. All of these like hard rated R movies, but they have this
that had Seth Rogen in them.
That had Seth Rogen in them. And they also had this thing where Judd Apatow would do these hard R movies, but they would have this kind of weird Heart of Gold story in the middle, like something heartwarming. It kind of like this storyline too. So it was interesting that Kevin Smith also took a stab at doing that kind of story. So I feel like there was enough twists and turns in the story that it was not predictable. So I enjoyed that part of it. There was definitely some really funny moments. Overall, you know, I don't have any complaints of the movie. I enjoyed it, you know, but, you know, it's not something that I would, definitely not watch every year, but it was an okay movie for me.
Well, tell us about that scene that you thought was so funny.
I think I died laughing on the Justin Long scene at the high school reunion.
He's a breakout star in this movie.
It was because I remember that in the early 2000s he did those Mac versus PC commercials, right? And then I saw him in a bunch of movies for a while, and then he disappeared. But I never saw this movie, and I don't know if you're telling me that he was a breakout star.
Saying like he, in my opinion, is the breakout star of the movie. Like, not really. He's not a starring character of the movie, but I feel like mm-hmm. his presence. Is he almost has a starring presence, because every scene that he is in is funny as hell. Like,
well, it's this one sequence, right? It's just the high school sequence, but it's just
the one scene. It's not just the one scene. He's got another scene at the end of the movie. Yeah.
At the end of the movie? Is it like during the credits?
I mean, technically the credits begin to roll before the scene happens, but there's a whole... The actual ending of the movie is in the credits.
Right. I know, that's what I'm saying.
It's a part of that commercial.
I wouldn't necessarily call that a scene. I would just call that part of the credits.
To me, I feel like it's the ending of the movie, because that shows the true result of what the movie was, and, you know, how they were able to turn. Like, that's the ending to me.
Okay, I definitely missed that part then.
You didn't see the credit scene?
No, was that like a Marvel post-credit scene?
No, it's like right after the credits start rolling. Like, it's before you get like the black screen scroll credits.
Huh. I thought I saw some of that before I turned it off.
Yeah, there's a whole scene where they start they start the production company that he talks about at the end of the at the end of the movie, and then now they're filming porn for regular couples. So basically, they started a service where they're saying, you know, like, stop putting a video camera at the end of the bed, like, let us professionally shoot and edit your porn so that it's, you know, of good quality and stuff like that. And that's how they're trying to make a business out of it. And then, and Justin Long is a part of that with what's his face, the other,
Brandon Routh.
Yeah.
Brandon, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And
Superman, you mean Superman?
He's not Superman in my
opinion. You mean Superman?
he is the Atom in my opinion. So that's where he goes. He gets to be Ray Palmer in the Arrowverse. And he plays.
I thought he actually gets to be Superman isn't that like a multiverse?
Well, he's Superman in that shitty Superman movie. And then he redeems himself by being in the Arrowverse as Ray Palmer, the Atom. Okay. But I guess he actually does come back as Superman in the Arrowverse in one episode.
Okay. I think not everybody might be following us on that.
It's super weird.
I'm barely following
super you, weird. So. But anyway, the Brandon Routh played the shitty Superman movie, and now he does another DC character.
Gotcha.
Which is much better. But anyway,
okay.
I feel like the two scenes that he's in are so funny. Like Justin Long's scenes are so fucking funny because it's like he takes the scene to where it's funny, and then he just keeps pushing it until it's like you're damn near crying from laughter.
After watching him in this, I'm surprised he hasn't done more work.
He's in like four Kevin Smith movies.
Was he in Tusk? I remember seeing the commercial for that.
Yeah, he's the lead in Tusk.
Okay, good.
We'll get to that.
All right.
That's one of those movies that I fully expect you to shit on. Okay. But
you never know. If it's strange enough, I might.
Like he's it. Also in. He's in the Die Hard movie, and he got in. He's in.
Yeah, Dragon Ball Z. I remember that. Wasn't Kevin Smith in that movie too? That Die Hard movie? Yeah. I remember, I've watched Drag Me to Hell. I remember him in that too, yeah. But this is still my favorite performance of his.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that, I mean, he's good in, he's also in Jay and Silent Bob Reboot too. He's good in that as well. Have you ever seen Dodgeball?
Yeah.
Or Accepted?
He's in it, right?
Yeah, he's in Dodgeball and
Accepted.
Okay.
Have you seen Accepted?
Yes, I have. That's the one where he starts his own school?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep, that's a good one. That's a really good one. Man, you're like bringing back like memories of a bunch of movies I've watched like a decade ago.
And he's in Waiting too.
I don't think I watched that one.
Ooh, okay.
Ooh. Yeah.
Okay. So, honestly, I mean, this wasn't a bad movie. I think I enjoyed it the further it went into it. First, I thought that I was not, I mean, it takes a turn at one point when they start to kind of like realize that they like each other, which, you know, you can kind of see coming. And then you're like, well, this is going to get too cliche. And for me, it didn't, because both of them, especially Elizabeth Banks, the performance there was spot on that it worked. You bought their basically change in their relationship and them actually falling in love.
Yeah, I mean, it is, to me, this is just a very unconventional romantic comedy.
Yeah, yeah. It has a lot, surprisingly, it has some kind of 80s, vibe to it as well, minus the hard R part.
Well, you know, Smith's like a huge John Hughes fan, loves like those types of movies from back in the day. So he uses it in dialogue in Jay and Silent Bob about, you know, how Silent Bob loves the movies of John Hughes or 16 Candles, and that's why they end up in Illinois. So it's kind of, I don't know if it's Kevin Smith's like you know, tribute to an 80s romantic comedy or, you know, one of those John Hughes movies, but it definitely, I can understand where it has that feel to it as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's there if you are a fan of the 80s movies, especially John Hughes movies, you can tell that is influencing Kevin Smith as far as how he's approaching this movie. Another thing that was, I mean, I don't know if he was conscious of it, but the fact that it's a group of people getting together and then basically shooting the movie at nights at the coffee store kind of was reminiscent of his own story of how he shot Clerks at night at his store, because that was the place that he used to work at. So he maxed out his cards and credit cards and basically directed the movie and wrote the movie Clerks that way. So I thought that was a nice kind of way of being an autobiographical element there.
Yeah, he does that a lot with a lot of his movies. That's where, like, the contrast with him and Tarantino is that they'll throw back to a lot of their older stuff and you catch it. Especially in the Jay and Silent Bob reboot, there's a ton of it in there.
It's pretty much that's why one of the reasons why we didn't even invite you is because in order to understand, we realized it even harder once we watched the movie that, like, you really have to watch the entire Kevin Smith catalog to understand what the hell they're even talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I can see how, I mean, just like Tarantino, there's it does a lot of referencing of his own previous work. It's basically creating its own universe.
Well, he actually does have a universe. Like, he has a name for the whole thing and everything.
Oh, is that the Askew universe that I saw somewhere?
The Buesque.
Oh, okay.
Buesque universe. Yeah. I don't know if this isn't really part of that, though.
Really? Why is that?
No, because there's no characters that
tie and all in of the all of the actors that are in the Buesque universe play different roles in this.
So, like, Dogma and Chasing Amy and Clerks and Mallrats and the Jay and Silent Bob reboot, those are all tied into the Buesque universe. Because all the characters from that first movie, Clerks, show up eventually in those movies.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's how they're all tied together. That's interesting.
Yeah, because it's mostly Jay and Silent Bob in most of them.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's like how with Tarantino, there's a movie that he adapted in the mid-90s. What was it called? With Pam Grier. Jackie Brown. So that is not part of his universe, but everything else is. Except Kill Bill is part of the universe, but it's a fictional universe within that universe. So it's not part of that universe. It's basically a show within that universe.
I wouldn't be surprised if the True North trilogy became something like that for the Buesque universe.
Give me like a one-sentence summary on what you mean by the True North trilogy.
Oh, never mind. It's actually going to be it's going to be a part of the Buesque universe. I just read that. The True North trilogy is Yoga Hosers, Moose Jaws, which hasn't been released yet, and Tusk.
Okay, I got you. Okay, so those are more of his newer films.
Yes, and they're weird as fuck.
Super.
They're like, these are the movies he made after he started smoking weed.
You mean he wasn't smoking weed before?
And having a podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
All of these movies are actually a part of the podcast.
Oh.
He created, because the whole concept was based off of Tusk, which literally the movie Tusk is based on an episode of Smodcast, which is Kevin Smith's first podcast.
Huh.
And the main characters in the movie are podcasters.
Well, I guess Kevin Smith fans have a lot to dig into. A lot of material.
Sure do.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess a better question is, where do you guys put this movie in his filmography?
Like, are you talking like rank-wise or just...
Yeah, as far as rank-wise, how do you guys see this movie? in his, I guess if there's a library of Kevin Smith movies, where would this be put as far as, hey, this is a movie you need to see, or yeah, this is one of his movies that it's a good one, but not one of his greats.
I would put it in one that you need to see, but I would also say that if you're introducing somebody to Kevin Smith, I would not introduce them to any of the True North movies until after they've seen the rest of his stuff. And then I would show them the View Askew movies, because those are the ones that I think those are the true Kevin Smith movies. I say like, those are like the more, the fanboy movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this, since this one isn't really a part of that, it is a great movie that he's done. And like, he's done great movies that have nothing to do with this. Like, they have nothing to do with the View Askew universe. Like, he did Cop Out, which he doesn't like, but is a great movie.
I love Cop Out
too. And then he did Red State, which is a great movie, but has nothing to do with View Askew universe. So he's done great movies that are aside from that. But if I was trying to show somebody who Kevin Smith is as a director, I wouldn't show them this movie. I would show them one of the View Askew movies.
Okay. Same for you, Devlin?
Yeah, I mean, you want to start them. You want to start them off at the beginning. I mean, you want to see. You want to show them the body of work prior to him branching out. So you want to go with the stuff in order that he did. You know, Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. You want to hit the stuff that he really put his heart and soul in making movies, because he just kept getting better production, more money on each of these movies that he did. I mean, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back made him, you know, a ton of money, because it wasn't until, you know, that time that everybody started hearing about, you know, Kevin Smith. I discovered Kevin Smith, you know, years ago when I was in high school, because someone was like, oh, have you seen this movie? And I'm like, it's in black and white. Like, I was really like taken aback by this black and white movie. And then I watched it and I'm like, this is really good. I mean, you can clearly tell these guys are crappy, you know, actors, but the story and the dialogue is all there. And it was funny. So, and it was that kind of that good, like right in the time frame where I was, you know, getting into some more adult humor, that, you know, it kind of was at the right place, right time movie for me. And then later on discovered, you know, Chasing Amy and Dogma as well. So I was like, oh, this guy's just, you know, who's this Kevin Smith guy? Who's this guy that's writing it? And then every song he told me, it was the guy who played Silent Bob. And I'm like, okay. So, yeah, I mean, you'd have to start him there. You just can't just throw him, you know, to the wolves on like Cop Out, because you'd be, some people don't like Cop Out. I love Tracy Morgan. And I think that it's a great kind of Eddie Murphy, Nick Nolte, 48 Hours-esque type movie. But I know Kevin didn't have such a great time being the director on that set, because Bruce Willis was not so kind to him. So,
see, that's where the evening with Kevin Smith, where he did dish out on some stories surrounding Bruce Willis, some of the funniest material I've ever listened to.
Oh yeah, when he was talking about wanting him to do a scene from like Honeymooner, or not Honeymooner.
I want you to do it this way, and then Bruce Willis, every take would do the exact same Bruce Willis performance. Nothing different.
And then he yelled at him. He's like, you want me to do a scene from a show, from something that I did 30 years ago? Are you kidding me? Go sit down, Kevin. And then he did it. And he's like, oh my God, he's doing it. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's what really left a bad taste in Kevin's mouth, is, you know, he got to be in Die Hard with him. And then, you know, had kind of a good relationship with him enough to get him to be in Cop Out. And yeah, that just kind of floundered from there, because now you're directing a guy who's, you know, been in movies a long, long time, and maybe Bruce just didn't want to play ball because Kevin's such a, you know, young director at that time, you know, still kind of, you know, relatively new.
Well, I don't think Kevin gets the respect he deserves in Hollywood, period.
I don't either.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's probably true. But there was one story that he said, where with Bruce Willis, I think a lot of it happened, and I'm surprised that Kevin Smith was owning up to this, because apparently on the day of this shot, Bruce Willis came in and he basically said, hey, what, before I get into the scene, what lens are you using? And then Keanu's like, well, I mean, it's going to be something like, ask the DP over there. And then Bruce Willis just stopped and looked at him. Are you telling me you, the director, do not know what lens is on your camera right now? And Kevin Smith was like, shit, he's calling me out on it. Because he primarily is a writer. That's where he comes from. And he just, and then for him, he'll just take the camera, put it down, and just shoot the scene. That's all he's really, for him, that's how he makes movies. He's not going to be too worried about what lens or how the camera moves or all of that. He just wants to get a bunch of actors in front of the camera. There's some dialogue that he's going to write, and then you go shoot it. Whereas Bruce was worked with all these great directors, and so for him, a mark of a great talent is like the guy knows all of the stuff. And I think at that moment, maybe Bruce Willis lost a lot of respect for Kevin Smith.
Well, Kevin doesn't shoot movies to be big Hollywood productions. He shoots movies to make, you know, to have fun. He doesn't really, when he writes, it's for the entertainment purposes. That's what he has in mind whenever he writes something.
Mm-hmm.
He's not doing it to be like a big Hollywood production. It's kind of like, I know watching Tarantino movies, he's writing movies that will come across the screen at his vision, and he's writing it that way. He's not going to stray from it.
Yeah.
So like I said, I think Tarantino and Smith kind of, they're on the same kind of parallel. They're just in two different lanes, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense.
And I think it's why I can appreciate Tarantino's work and Smith's work, because Smith gives you a lot of funny and some action, and Tarantino gives you a lot of action and a little funny. But they're all dialogue-based writers, so I really can appreciate their whole body of work.
Yeah, I think you're going to get the two most authentic dialogues in movies out of the two of them, in my opinion. I think Tarantino writes amazing dialogue, and I think Smith does too, but I think Smith's form of dialogue is more like, it's more like, to me, it seems it's more like a group of friends talking shit with each other. And that's to me how his dialogue works.
Okay. So for you guys, the dialogue in this movie came off as authentic?
I do. I think so. I think
yeah,
so.
I mean,
I also think that.
Okay.
Have you ever seen a porno?
You think people are going to talk like that in a porno?
Yes. I think that's the point, though.
No, not that. I'm talking about more like the I especially in the beginning, I thought that just the use of profanity seemed almost heavy-handed, like it was like a crutch in his dialogue rather than it being an actual use in everyday conversation.
Have you ever had a conversation?
I eventually got used to it.
Have you ever heard this podcast, Vivin? Have you ever
did you listen to the Elf episode?
Yeah. Well, no, that's the first thing I said. Oh, this is going to be a perfect Jason and Devlin movie. That part is true. But even for Kevin Smith, I was like, is he getting a little lazy here, or is he actually trying?
There's a great scene, and I know you guys have never seen it, but in Trailer Park Boys, where they're in court, and Ricky, one of the characters, gets up, and like the judge is basically saying, you can't cuss in my courtroom, and he gets up and says, look, he's like, I can't talk without cussing. It's just going to happen. Like, he's like, either you're going to let me do it or not. Like, it's just, I can't go 5 minutes without saying a cuss word.
Okay.
But it's a really funny scene because he's trying to get out of jail, but he's trying not to piss off the judge at the same time, but he's being honest. He's like, I cannot talk without cussing. Like, that's me. I can't go a few minutes without saying a cuss word. I don't know. It's just in my vocabulary, but I know if me and Jason were sitting in a room and just talking, and then I'm sure eventually it would get to, we're going to make fun of each other, and we're going to talk shit to each other, and then, you know, we're going to cuss a lot. That's just going to happen.
Okay.
Like, I'm sure you could, I mean, I'm not saying you, I know, Viv, you tried not to cuss, but it just happens in dialogue with people in conversation.
I feel like it's an authentic representation of me and my friends.
Yeah, and that's, I did get that feeling, but I wanted to actually bring that up and get a confirmation from you, both of you guys, from having.
But it's not about the cussing. It's about how the cussing is used.
Right.
And you can use a cuss word, but you have to make it good for that moment.
Like that,
it has to be part of the flow of the conversation.
It's kind of like Samuel L. Jackson in Tarantino's movie when in Pulp Fiction when he's like, "I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing." Like,
yeah, that okay. moment, I can see that.
It was for the purposes of the fear tactic that he was trying to play right there. That sounded authentic. So you know, if you switch it up and you think about that scene, and he would have said, "I don't remember asking you anything." Doesn't have that same feel.
Right. That's yeah. It is definitely different. No, I am on the same page with you on that. And I mean,
I think it comes through in this dialogue too, especially like, I mean, if you think about like the scene where he shoves the hand warmer down his pants in the very beginning of the movie, and he pulls over and he's like freaking out because it's like caught his balls on fire, basically. To me, that's funny as hell, and it feels authentic. Like,
yeah,
right, because your friend is not understanding that she just watched you put it in your pants, and then he's like, oh shit, he's like, pull the car, and she's not listening, he's like, not illustrating his point, and he's like, pull the car.
Well, and not only that, but even the scene where he literally steals the hand warmer out of her hand and puts it down his pants, that might have seemed like a thing where it was off and not something that would happen. But to me, that shit was fucking on point and funny as hell, because I would 100% steal a hand warmer from a friend of mine and put that shit down my pants. I could 100% see me doing that. So that's why it felt real.
Knowing you, I can tell you that you would 100% done that. Yes.
Right. Or like, yes, there's like a scene in the movie where he's at the high school reunion. And like, this is not who I am now, but had I stayed the same person I was in high school, there's a scene in the movie. He asks this chick, and she's like, "Oh, my fucking boyfriend's over there hitting on so-and-so." And he goes, "Give me a hand job in the bathroom." That's the type of bold questions and shit that I would have asked in high school. So if it was like, to me, these are people that are high school kids that never really grew the fuck up.
I think that's part of like Kevin Smith's type of characters, right?
Well, it could be a crescendo for him where he's now like, you know, he's never really grown up in anything he's ever wrote, but maybe this was a movie that he wrote saying, okay, I've went from kind of being an adolescent to maybe moving into adulthood.
Well, that is actually pretty illuminating. So, do you guys have a... We should probably talk about our favorite scenes in the movie. I'll go ahead
sure. and
say mine, because it's already pretty obvious. The high school reunion scene is my favorite scene, because it has Justin Long in it, and that bought the giggles. It was freaking funny.
Real quick question. Did Beth watch this movie with you?
Mm-hmm.
Did she laugh at it?
A couple of times. Yeah.
I either felt like when we picked this movie, my first thought was like, Beth is either going to be like, you're never allowed to let them pick another movie again, or she was going to think it was funny. So it was like quite a toss up for me.
Yeah. I think we were kind of in the same wavelength as far as it's not our type of movie, but there were some parts that we did laugh at, and also the whole when it turns more into like those John Hughes portions, we're like, oh, okay, we can relate to that. And so I think that's what we kind of latched on to by the end of the movie, like, okay, because of that, I think we ended up having a better time with the movie.
Gotcha. Okay, Dev, your favorite scene?
It's the scene. It's the one kind of scene where they go to shoot the scene with Mary, and that's the kind of the culmination of like her finding out that Zach didn't, you know, sleep with Stacy, and then Jeff Anderson, the guy he's under the two people.
Oh.
And he's like, all right, watch the pullout, guys.
Oh.
And then he comes out, he's like, fuck this, boom, and he just all over him, and he comes out, and Delaney's like, "Hey, where are you going?" Da, da, da. And he's like, "You believe this shit?" And he's like, "You believe this shit?" He's like, "That chick frosted me like a fucking cake."
Okay, that might be my favorite quote in the movie, and I think I blacked out that scene. That was don't almost traumatizing. Covered to me again. That was almost traumatizing. Okay. Christ. Okay, that was yeah.
Whew. There's a behind the scenes thing where they show how they did that to Jeff Anderson. It was like a potato gun filled with like chocolate and like corn, and it just annihilated him in the face. Oh. But it's that whole scene. That's my favorite scene. I laugh at that.
I knew that was going to be your favorite scene. I think my favorite scene. My favorite scenes are any scene where Craig Robinson is interacting with a person not in the production of this movie. Like, not involved in the porno scenes. Like, when the guy comes up and he's like, "I'll take a coffee, black." And he goes, "Can you see I'm talking white?" Every damn time he says that shit, where he's like, "You know how racist it is to make me work on Black Friday?" That whole interaction, that whole shit is so, I feel like Craig Robinson is so fucking funny in this movie. Like, he's funny in everything. Like, he's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine in every single season, and every single episode that he's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine are like my favorites in every season. And he's great in The Office. He's so fucking funny. But in this movie in particular.
Craig Robinson in real life tried to punk me one time. That's a true story.
Oh, yeah? At the.
I went to a Craig Robinson comedy show at the Funny Bone. Because I was like, I love Craig Robinson. He has a direct line to my Funny Bone. Literally.
All right, continue.
But we got front row tickets, and starting off the show, and he saw me sitting down there, and he's like, "Oh, what do you do for a living?" And I told him, and he's like, "Oh, can I get a loan?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, come on out, I'll get you a loan." He's like, "Did you say blow?" And I was like, "No, I didn't say blow." Like, what a room full of people! It was just like he tried to pump my punk card, but it was pretty funny.
That's my interaction. That was pretty awesome. He has such great delivery. As most great comedians, impeccable.
First time I ever saw him was in Friends.
Huh. Where's he at in Friends?
And when Phoebe changes her name, and she goes in and she says, "I want to change it to this," and he's like, "You can change it to anything you want." And she's like, "Oh, I want to change it." He's like, "Anything you want."
Yep.
That's when she changed it to Princess Consuela Banana Hammock.
Nice. That definitely seems like a line delivered by.
But that's Greg. The first time I ever seen him. He's got a huge, huge afro in that scene in Friends.
Nice.
All right, boys. I think it's ratings time. Your thoughts? Ratings time?
You know what?
Favorite character. Who's your favorite character? We didn't do favorite characters.
I'm going to go with, obviously, my favorite character is Justin Long's character. Is this the same thing as favorite performance?
Sure.
I love Justin Long's performance in that, but he's my favorite character, but my favorite performance is probably Elizabeth Banks. I think she, for me, carried the movie. It's her kind of, she came off so natural, it just kind of made the crazy parts of the movie work.
I like the character of Delaney, played by Craig Robinson. I think that, like Jason said, Craig's funny at everything he does, and I really just, his character stands out to me in the movie.
Nice.
Jason?
I would say it's probably a toss up between Craig Robinson and Justin Long's characters in the movie. They're both probably my favorite characters slash performances in the movie. Although I think Jason Mewes is funny as hell too, though. When he's the line delivery and how smooth he is when he says, he's like, "Oh, what's your name?" And he says, "It's Lester, the molester, cock and stuff." And he's like, "Man, that's a great porn name.
Great porn name.
We get porn names? Pete.
Pete Jones."
That shit was funny as fuck. But yeah, no, it would probably be the two of them. I think everybody nails this movie, though.
Nice. Yeah. The performances really were great across the board.
All right. Ratings time. Ratings time.
All right. I'll go first so I'm not influenced by both of you. I'm going to give this movie a 6.
Fucking knew you were going to give it above a 6. Dev?
It's an 8 for me.
Yeah, it's an 8 for me on that as well.
Okay. Not a bad one. So, do we have any closing thoughts before we head to the break?
No, sir.
I think we got this shit covered.
I think we did.
Shit covered. Welcome back to Know Your Cinema Podcast. My name is Devlin Clemens. We are on to segment 2 of this week's episode. It is the bullshit / question and answer section of our podcast.
I like so to refer each of to us it as the
decide to ask a
get to know your cinema or the know your cinema.
know your cinema.
Know your hosts. Know your cinema.
Right. But each week something new we're trying. Each week each of us asks a question to the other two in regards to movie related stuff. So this week my question for the other two and myself is who is your favorite actor who is no longer alive?
I'll go ahead and take this. My favorite actor who's no longer with us is Robin Williams. The day he passed was probably the hardest day that I ever had that had nothing to do with somebody who I personally knew, you know? Like, it was just like a really rough day for me because it was just like I'd kind of grown up watching Robin Williams stuff. And so when he passed, it was just a really hard day, and I truly wish that he was still here.
Yeah, I can second that. I had a similar experience when I found out that he passed away. I was just moping around all day, and my friends were like, "What? I don't understand. Okay, so a celebrity passed away. Why are you being so dramatic about it?" I was like, "I can't explain it, but he defined my childhood, you know? There were so many happy times and laughs and things that, you know, some of his greatest movies came out, you know, in my formative years. So for me, that kind of created that bond with him."
Yeah, I had a weird kind of, I guess my second place to this would be Paul Walker, because I'm a huge Fast and Furious fan, and my whole family has been, and like kind of, you know, I've always loved those movies. So when he passed away, that was another thing that kind of like was kind of a gut punch of a day for me as well, but not anywhere near as much as what Robin Williams was. But
yeah,
Paul Walker's death was also a pretty rough one. And I wish that he was still with us and cranking out all the Fast and the Furious sequels.
Nice. No, the one that I really wish that was still around and gave me the biggest gut punch was the day I found out that Heath Ledger passed away. And I mean, you guys know how big of a fan I am of The Dark Knight. It's one of my favorite movies. but he passed away January 23rd of that year, of 2008. And the whole year I was amping up for that movie. I knew this movie was coming out. I had seen a extended preview of the opening of The Dark Knight. I think it had played with I Am Legend on IMAX in 2007, December. People were wondering at that time, why was Heath Ledger cast as the Joker? It just did not compute. I mean, this was the guy who had played in The Knight's Tale and all of his other roles did not clue you in to his towering performance he was going to give as the Joker. But within that 5-minute segment, you could already see what he was going to do in the movie. And so I was already kind of watching all of his other movies, getting hyped up, ready to go. And then you find out that happened. You're like, oh. And then the movie comes out and you see it and you see what a monumental achievement, like one of the great performances he delivers. And you're like, of all the other things that he could have done. And so for me, that was an actor I really wish was still around, because I feel like there's a lot more performances that, you know, he would have given that would kind of, you know, would stay, you know, in history and be part of our culture.
That's fair. Yeah. Definitely warranted, 100%. Dev, your thoughts?
Robin Williams and Heath Ledger are both great choices. We all grew up with Robin Williams. He spans generations. My mom's, your mom's, us, me, you guys. So it's a great choice. Mine is Chris Farley.
Yeah.
Chris Farley died when I was 15. And I remember just being like, I think I understand what like the world felt like when they lost Belushi. And, you know, it was really kind of a bitter pill as a fan to swallow when Farley died, because just loved everything he touched was gold. And now seeing parts that Farley should be in and he's not in, and it's like, man, he would have just knocked it out of the park in this role. I was telling, you know, Jason that if you've ever seen the movie Grown Ups, the part that Kevin James plays was actually written for Farley. They wrote the script in the 90s, and they wrote that part with Farley in mind. And to see that was like, wow, okay, I could see where Farley would fit perfectly in this role. And it'd be a completely different character. Same thing with, you know, I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. If that was Farley in the Kevin James role, that would have been 10 times more funnier than the movie already is.
Yeah, so you can see both of those roles being tailor fit for Farley.
Not disparaging Kevin James. He's funny in his own right, but right. He's not Farley by any stretch of the imagination. But it's definitely Farley for me.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah, he was in some ways a little bit before my time, but I still remember watching those movies growing up. Absolutely. You know, he was one of those great actors.
Yep. Well, moving on to Jason's question. Jason asks, who is an actress / actor that if you see they are involved in a project, you know instantly you're going to watch it? Bib, why don't you take this
one? I will let you make one guess who this person is.
Leonardo DiCaprio. Close.
Christian Bale.
Obviously, it was Christian Bale. I thought that was you. As soon as I proposed the question, I was like, well, it's obviously Christian Bale for Vivin.
Yes.
Well, I mean, Vivin could have thrown us the curveball and said that.
That was Daniel actually a close second. I was really considering going Daniel Day-Lewis, but honestly, yeah. Any movie that has Christian Bale comes out, I'm like, yeah, gotta watch it. I don't care if the movie is a piece of crap. I still want to watch his performance in it. So, That's a big one for me. All right, Jason.
It's The Rock for me. I mean, it may be, I don't know what it is about that dude, but every single time I see that he's involved in a movie, I know I'm going to watch that shit. I don't know what it is about his performances, but I eat him up.
So you're hyped for Jungle Cruise, huh?
Yeah, I think it looks stupid and awesome, and I'm geeked for it.
Nice. Oh, nice. What about you, Devlin?
Mine is Daniel Day-Lewis.
Are you shitting with me?
I do have a backup game as well.
It's because I everything I've watched, it's always gold. And the selling point for me was The Butcher in Gangs of New York.
What a performance.
I went and watched There Will Be Blood, and the movie's okay, but the performance that he gives in that movie is tremendous.
Yeah, it's,
and I love period pieces like that too. So, and I'll have to give Christian Bale his due. If you've never seen the movie Hostels, that's a phenomenal movie as well with Christian
Bale. I also really like him in The Fighter, if you guys have seen that. Completely just, yes. It's a role where he really transforms.
We just talked about how Mark Wahlberg was a guy that, you know, we didn't like at first and then we liked, but Bale plays a good, I guess it would be a good bad character in that,
yeah.
In that movie. But that's mine. I know it shocked
the shocked you guys, me, absolutely.
If I see Daniel Day-Lewis, that was
okay.
That's awesome. It's not like he does a lot of things. So when I see it, I know it's going to be something.
My backup answer to that, and actually it's probably more prevalent, but he doesn't really do a whole lot of roles anymore, which is why I said The Rock, would be Jim Carrey. If I ever see the Jim Carrey's in something, I'm going to watch it.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Have you seen his new series?
I have not. The only reason is I'm just broke, so I haven't paid to watch it. But it does look awesome. I just haven't seen it.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing really good stuff about that show.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do want to see
it. Nice, very nice. Yeah, Jim Carrey is
all right. Going to Vivian's question. Vivian's question this week is, imagine you are a producer and a studio is willing to greenlight any movie you want to make. Describe the team, the dream team you would put together to make your movie. Well, I'll go first on this one. So this was a hard one. This was a hard one to think about. There's so many actors. So I thought about if it was going to be like a serious dramatic movie or something of that nature. So I said Morgan Freeman, Leonardo DiCaprio, Daniel Day-Lewis, and I wanted to throw a female in there too. So it took me a lot of thinking about like female actresses, and I don't really have one that I always drawn to, but the one I kept coming back to was Sandra Bullock.
Okay,
she's phenomenal.
Yeah, she's really good, really really good actress. Yeah. Okay.
Who's the director on that?
Yeah, did you say a director on that? Did you pick a director?
You didn't pick a writer.
You didn't pick a director. Oh, the director would be Tarantino.
Okay. Would you also have him write the movie? Okay.
Of course.
Just asking. No. All right. Jason, how about you?
So I picked two because I like serious movies, but I also like comedy. So I picked a comedy version and a serious version.
Okay.
So for me, the comedy version, I would have it starring The Rock and Jim Carrey.
Okay.
And doing something. And I would have it written by and directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Oh, okay. Interesting choices.
I think that would be a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell it would be, but it would be interesting.
Okay.
And then,
so that's your comedy, okay?
Yeah, that's the comedy. And then the serious movie, I would take, I would actually take Brad Pitt and, damn, what the hell is his name? We just said it like 2 seconds ago.
DiCaprio.
Yeah, DiCaprio and Brad Pitt. And I would have it directed by, damn, I'm drawing blanks on everything. The Fight Club guy. And
I would, David Fincher.
Yeah, I would have Fincher.
Okay. That's a solid one. Well, Pitt has worked with Fincher quite a few times, so I can see that happening.
Right, and I think that any performance that he's done with Fincher have been probably some of the best Brad Pitt performances that exist. And I think I don't think throwing in DiCaprio would make it a bad movie.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. That's always a bonus.
Yeah, I mean, that guy's you put Leonardo DiCaprio in a movie, you're guaranteed to get something gold.
Yeah. Yeah. He has probably had the most home runs as far as just consistency of quality in movies that he's done. I mean, since he's been a kid. His back catalog of movies that he's done, I mean, you look at it and you're like, wow, Gangs of New York, Aviator, The Departed, you know, The Revenant, I mean, Titanic, he's just done one after Gilbert the other Grape. Movies that's going, Gilbert Grape, yeah, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, just Romeo and Juliet, that is actually a good one. And so all of these movies, I think he's his filmography is something to be admired.
I personally would put him as I think he's the best actor of our generation.
Yeah, I can see that. Absolutely see that. Okay, so for me, after I posed this question, I had to actually think about it for a while. Because there were so many different options and so many different routes to go down. First thing I did was I took the obvious out. The obvious was going to be just getting Christopher Nolan to do a movie. But then at that point, I was like, well, I don't really need to do anything else. Just hire Christopher Nolan and you're done. So I took him out of the running.
Wait, you decided he was not going to be a part of it?
Yes, because he would be too much of a singular force. Like after that, once you hire Christopher Nolan, it's like there's nothing else for me to do as a producer. It's like you do whatever you want, but you know, there's no creative input for me. I wanted to put a team together. So for that reason, I took him out of the running. I'm just trying to think of the dream team. If I was going to make a dream movie, these are the people, elements that I want to kind of bring together and see how they work together.
All right. Who is Christian Bale in this movie with?
Hold off. First off. We'll see. How dare you, Jason? How dare you? Before we get to the actors, again, I still found it too big of a field to figure out what to choose from until I knew what kind of story we were going to be doing. So what I settled on is I want to do a story where it's going to be an older Batman.
Okay.
And it would be, I'm sorry, I forget the new Batman's name.
Ben Affleck is the older Batman that you're looking for?
Unfortunately not. I'm thinking more Daniel Day-Lewis. The older Batman.
You want like decrepit Batman.
I want old seasoned Batman, and maybe he could be training the new Batman. So a story something like that. So it's going to be very dark, atmospheric. But I wanted a completely original story. So what I want to do is I want to get Alan Moore to write the story. So something that is like super epic and super out there and crazy. So something like as big as The Watchmen, but it has to do with the Batman universe. Okay. And then the person I would want to do the music would be Ennio Morricone. And maybe he could like partner up with Hans Zimmer. So maybe they would have a good mix. Ennio Morricone did all the great kind of spaghetti westerns. And his sounds, I feel like, would be, he'd bring something original here. And then for the editor, I would want Thelma Schumacher. She's done all of Martin Scorsese's movies since the 80s. So I think she is phenomenal. So I think she would really kind of bring something new here. I'm going to go into the weeds before I get to the directors, or the director and the actors.
For a casting and also, designer.
What's that?
For a costume designer.
I almost got there, that I held off. For production designer. You didn't think I was going to go there, but I am going to go. I've been really digging into like the sets and everything of movies these days, especially like movies like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. A lot of it is on how they build the sets and what the look of it. So for me, I've been really digging that. So two people that I've been really impressed with and I would like to bring on to this project is, one is Nathan Crawley. He's done all of Nolan's movies since Batman Begins. And here's the cool thing. What they do is actually when they write out their stories, Nolan actually takes out his garage, cleans everything out, and they do all the mock-ups in the garage. So that's how they came up with the Tumblr and the Batmob and the bat part and all of that. So, and plus, he's done all the other ones too, like Interstellar, Dunkirk, all of that. So I think he'd be great to bring him in. And there was this Japanese production designer who's done a couple of Quentin Tarantino movies. Like he did the Kill Bill movie, the Yoshi Ren fight scene that happens in the garden after the Crazy 88s. That whole set he designed. And he also designed the Haberdashery and Hateful Eight. So I really like both of those sets. So I would want him and Nathan Crawley to kind of collaborate together and come something up after, you know, we have a script. And I might be breaking the rules here, but I wanted to go like full crazy here. For the director, I want to have Stanley Kubrick, because I would like to have a comic book movie done by Stanley Kubrick and see what that would be like.
Trash.
And phenomenal, like the greatest thing in movie history.
Didn't Kubrick direct the worst movie of all time, that 2001 A Space Odyssey?
No, that was it was Eyes Wide Shut.
He did right. Both of those? So,
he did both yeah. of those.
Oh, wow. Yeah, this guy's what else? He did do The Shining, though, didn't he?
He did do The
Clockwork yeah. Orange.
Yep.
Okay, so he's got like
Full Metal Jacket.
Damn. Yep. Okay. So he's got like a couple of good ones that could work towards this. And then 2001 A Space Odyssey.
He
is really actually might make a good Batman world building. Good Batman world building.
He's really good at world building. He's really good at creating very intense atmospheres. So that's why I feel like he might be a good director. He's an odd choice, but I feel like he might pull it off. And then, obviously, we already mentioned, as far as actors, I want to have Daniel Day-Lewis. I don't know what these other actors are going to do in this movie, but I'm just going to cast them and see Alan Moore will figure out what to do with them. I want to have Denzel Washington to be at some part in this movie. I want to have Christoph Waltz. I want to have Anthony Hopkins. I want to have Jodie Foster and Helen Mirren. So these are the actors that I want to have. And then, obviously, the rest of it will fill it out as the, you know, the script demands.
So is this like Hannibal Lecter trying to eat Batman?
You know, no, there's a villain that an aged, like if he played an older version, since Batman's old too, if he played, I can't think of what his name is. He starts with a Z. It's a Batman villain. I think his name starts with a Z. He puts tally marks all over his skin. Do you know what I'm talking about, Devlin?
Oh, shit. You asked me too quick. Not off the top of my head.
Anyway, this particular dude puts like tally marks for every kill on his like skin and shit, so he's covered in tally marks. Mm-hmm. I think
it's Zaz.
Yeah. I think he would be an awesome old version of Zaz. Anthony Hopkins would.
Really? Okay. Done.
I think that would actually probably play out really well. Because he's never been in a movie before, and they don't really actually he's never really in anything. But
He's kind of dark. He's a little dark for Batman villains. Like darker right. than the Joker.
Yeah, he's probably like the darkest of the Batman villains. One of the
perfect. I mean, it's so you want the director who did The Shining to be able to do that kind of movie.
Well, yeah, that's why I kind of that's actually the reason why I was thinking that is because of okay. how dark he, you know, how dark. Well, because he's known for pushing his actors to the breaking point to get the results he wants out of them. So
yep, yep. One actor literally is now crazy because of him. So yes, this is true.
I think that that would be an interesting thing to see played out because I can see him like because I mean obviously Anthony Hopkins has played really fucked up characters before, so seeing the two of them work together with that would be really interesting. And then so if we're having him train the next Batman, are we talking like Batman Beyond? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah that's what I was hoping for, so somebody young to come in to be Batman Beyond.
And then who was the other actors that you had in there? You had
They were all more older actors, so I haven't cast anybody for the young Batman or Batman Beyond. So those were like just be actors that I would like to see in a movie together, like Denzel Washington, Christoph Waltz, Helen Mirren, Jodie Foster, just people that I enjoy watching. I want to have them all in a movie together.
I can actually see this actually playing out really well. This could make a good Batman.
I'm actually surprised.
I worry most about the role that I'm most worried about, and it's mostly for his own sanity, is Daniel Day-Lewis playing Batman.
I would be a little bit worried about that too. He might take it a little too far.
Yeah, just because of the type of person he is, I think he might be better fit to play a villain.
I mean, it might actually be a really interesting challenge.
You could actually cast him as Zaz and put Hopkins as the old retired Batman too.
I guess both of them. I really want to see.
Can we just make Anthony Hopkins Alfred?
No, he's dead. Clearly dead.
How about Alfred unless he's like a force ghost on his deathbed? How about Alfred on his deathbed?
You mean like in Batman Robin?
Yeah. Actually, that's who you get Chris O'Donnell to play.
Zaz.
just bring him back as Robin.
Can we just redo Batman and Robin, and we can just recast it, and like we can have
that's fine.
we can just recast it. We can make Daniel Day-Lewis Two-Face.
There you go. Well, there was that Batman. Animated movie called, I think it was called Sub-Zero. I think that was a really good Mr. Freeze movie. They should just remake that movie, make that a live action movie.
And cast Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze again.
No. Yeah, Rick maybe that's
where we're of all time. Mm-hmm. You know what's so bad is that somehow Arnold Schwarzenegger's performance as Mr. Freeze is not as bad as Tommy Lee Jones' Two-Face.
Jesus. Don't get me started on that.
I have no comment on it. I don't even know where to start again. Just like Devlin.
No, it's the same thing. It's the same thing that I was mad about when Nolan killed off Two-Face in the
talking about that. Okay.
Yeah, there's... I wasn't happy about that either, so...
His Two-Face was good, but he just could have been better.
We could have gotten that for the third part. We didn't need Bane.
Well, he wasn't going to kill him off, but he only reason he killed him off is because he thought that because Heath Ledger was not going to die, and that
I know the reasons why. I mean, just reshoot it. That's how I look at it. Reshoot it. But I mean, like, I digress at this point. I'm never happy with an on-screen Two-Face other than the Batman animated series.
Oh, so that is a good one.
Just never have had a good portrayal of Two-Face, and the Batman Arkham games have a good Two-Face storyline too. So,
Someday I'm going to play those games.
I think anybody that knows how to make – anybody that makes a Batman movie understands how to make Two-Face. I don't think they get the character.
Yeah, I don't think they get it either. That's the problem. I think just they were, with Batman and Robin, they just they were. It was supposed to be, I can't think of it. Billy Dee Williams, and they bought out Billy Dee Williams' contract because he was actually contractually obligated to play Two-Face when that character was to come into play. And they were just like, well, we're just going to make it a kid-friendly movie and vibrant colors and Tommy Lee Jones is next to Jim Carrey. So how are you gonna try to upstage Jim Carrey? You're just going to be a basically almost like the Joker and just way over the top. And
no, that was all on him.
I know.
Naughty. That's fucking, I don't know who in their right mind is like, you know what I should do? I should try to outperform Jim Carrey in my insanity.
Like, well, the problem is that they tried to put two villains in the same movie
in a really weird way.
They if you look at Batman, the Michael Keaton, the first one, it was a Joker. The Returns is the Penguin
and Catwoman.
And Catwoman, but it never really, like, you know, they never really worked together, so to speak. And then, you know, they go to the next one and it's Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey.
Penguin was phenomenal, by the way. That role does not get enough appreciation.
That was a really good role. Yeah, nobody talks about it that much, but it was a really good role. Well done.
Do you know why?
His name slipped in my mind.
Guys, DeVito. Danny DeVito.
Yeah, Danny DeVito.
The reason why that movie wasn't as... the biggest reason why that movie wasn't as talked about or as successful is because of a partnership with McDonald's. Because they... So most of the movie was half, like a good portion of the movie was funded by McDonald's. So when they made like all these tie-ins for this movie, they didn't really expect it to be as dark as it was. So that's why we ended up with like a really weird, kind of like Batman movie that isn't as talked about as it was. 'Cause they kind of swept it under the rug a bit after it was out and dark, and Penguin was like a really fucked up character. Like he almost fit into like Nolan verse fucking as a character.
That's interesting. No,
it's perfect for Burton. It's Burton. It's perfect for Burton. Honestly,
it is. Yeah, but it is for sure. But I think I just feel like the darkness. I mean, he could have reprised the role. I mean, it would have been, he would have probably had to change some slight stuff, but I think we could have put that one character over and it would have been.
I think the Penguin portrayed in the Gotham series is more up Nolan's alley.
Not
really.
The Danny DeVito, yeah. I think it's more, if you watch the show, you'll be like, okay. Because it's still dark, but it seems more like how Nolan would have shot it.
Oh, he's like
the main villain, isn't he?
Huh?
Isn't he like the main villain in that?
Yeah, in season one, they bring in a lot of. They even bring in Zazz in that series.
Oh no, shit! Is it actually good?
Yeah, it's a good series.
Yeah, I've never seen.
They
I assume.
Yeah, they bring in. It's all young, so it's like, it's young Commissioner Gordon, right after Bruce's parents die, and he's kind of, you know, it's building to Batman becoming Batman. So you get like a young Selina Kyle, you get a young Penguin, you get a young Riddler, you get a young Commissioner Gordon, young Penguin. So you get to see the characters evolve into their actual characters, even a young Joker.
Very nice, yeah. Someday I'll have to play both the game and watch the show when I have some time.
Right. Well, gentlemen, I think we're good on segment two now.
also known as the Let's Talk Batman Again segment.
Yeah, that's what we do. I blame Vivin.
This is all on me.
Batman amongst us.
This is all on me. I'll take responsibility for that one.
We just need to do an episode where we just talk Batman. Like, no particular, just not even a movie. We just talk Batman for the entire duration of a thing.
That's a gift to our fans.
Well, I'm sure that we'll have to review the next Batman movie coming out. So,
yes, we will. Yes, we will.
So, and gentlemen, we got anything else?
Nope.
All right. We will see you guys in just a short bit.
We are back with the final and most exciting portion of our show. The portion of our show where we select the movie that we're going to be watching and reviewing in the next episode. On the wheel for a possible selection is a you-pick slot where if that comes up, you, the listener at home, will have a chance to vote in a poll on our Facebook page, so make sure you follow that at facebook.com/KYC podcast to get a chance to pick. The other movies that are on the poll or on the wheel right now are Friday, Frailty, Robin Hood, the animated Disney classic, Silence of the Lambs, The Shawshank Redemption, Princess Bride, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Gone Girl, and Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. Are you ready at home? Because we're ready.
Yes. We are ready.
It is The Princess Bride.
Really?
Really looking forward to that one.
It's a good one.
Me too.
Inconceivable.
That is the movie, a movie that I have not seen and I'm very excited to get a chance to watch.
And I get to tell a tremendous Andre the Giant story.
Those are always a treat.
Oh yeah, it is a good one. Yeah. Man, I'm excited for you to watch it, Jason, and hear your response to this movie.
Yeah, super excited. Can't wait.
Good.
So, if you are also excited to hear our thoughts on Princess Bride, be sure to tune in next Tuesday to hear our review of that. As always, you know, make sure you follow us on social media. Again, the facebook.com/KYC podcast, at KYC podcast on Twitter, at KYC podcast on Instagram. Make sure you check those out. We post some fun stuff on there. And again, the polls when those pop up will be on there as well. Other than that, It was a great time with you guys tonight talking Zach and Miri Make a Porno and a lot of Batman. we hope you enjoy it, and we would like to send a warm go fuck yourself to everybody in our listening fan base. Again, that is a warm go fuck yourself.
Yes.
Because we mean it in the most positive way that you could possibly say it.
Yes. Go fuck yourself.
We love you, and go fuck yourselves.
Yeah. Vivin, we're going to need one of those from you today.
One day. But till next time.
Why can't it be today? Why can't you just be a team player?
You know, part of the team.
Take one for the team, eh?
Yeah.
No, give a go fuck yourself to the team.
One day, guys. All right. But for tonight, c'est la vie.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.